With the first pick in the 2007 NFL Draft, the Oakland Raiders select quarterback Jamarcus Russell, LSU.
And here we go.
Back, NFP Nation. This is Wes Bunning, the Director of College Scouting here at the National Football Post, and you are listening to Draft Talk version 2.0. And this week we have another special guest, college football columnist Bruce Feldman is going to join us. So Bruce, thanks for coming on, man. How are things?
Things are good. I was out at a game last weekend at West Virginia to see LSU, and you know, it's a great time of year just because now we're in the thick of the race.
Yeah, without a doubt. And we'll get to LSU, West Virginia in the second half of this podcast, but we'll start first off with a game I'm sure you're able to see a little bit of. And if not, we're just going to talk quarterbacks for a little bit. And two of the top-rated quarterbacks in this year's draft, but Bruce, you can look at it from a college standpoint as well. We'll start with Texas A&M quarterback Ryan Tannehill, the former wide receiver turned quarterback, high school quarterback when he was recruited by Sherman. But from what you've seen this year, what do you like about him at the college level?
There's a lot to like, Wes. You know, he is very athletic. I mean, he was a really good receiver, just basically moonlighting as a receiver last year for A&M and even the year before that. And so you have, you know, you have his athleticism. He has a good arm. I mean, this is a guy I think has shown he can make all the throws. I mean, he's definitely got good skill guys around him. You know, they've got a deep group of receivers, two big-time backs. I think the issue to keep in mind with them is they have such a young offensive line, especially, last year it was obscenely young, but it's still kind of gelling. And I think that you saw him give a spark to the team last year. You know, I went down, you know, spent some time in College Station before the season last year, and, you know, Johnson had been there for a while, was a guy everybody liked, really bright guy, and obviously struggled last season. But I remember listening to him talk about how much respect not only the whole team had for Ryan Tannehill, but he did for, you know, the character he had, the kind of work ethic he had. And you saw the way the team responded, and it was like they flipped a switch when he went in and took over the team. And the other things you really have to like about him is, you know, yeah, he played quarterback in high school, but he really hasn't played that much. Mm-hmm. And so to see how he's been able to operate that offense, I think this is I know people cringe at the term upside, but this isn't a guy who has spent, you know, thousands of hours being groomed by QB coaches all the time and had a lot of stuff to work through. I mean, I think he's a guy of all the ones I know. Everyone's list starts with Andrew Luck, and I think rightly so. But I always thought here's a dark horse guy because his arm is very good, his feet are outstanding. He's just still pretty raw, and so I think you're gonna see those things develop. I mean, I thought the Aggies were going to win that game, part of which is because I know they have a lot of firepower and offense, but I also thought Tim DeRuiter, you know, who's a really good defensive coordinator, would be able to contain Oklahoma State for four quarters, and obviously that didn't happen.
Yeah, a couple things, Bruce, that you brought up that I wanted to touch on. One, outside of Andrew Luck, you're going to be hard-pressed to convince me that there's a better quarterback prospect in this year's draft outside of Tannehill. For a couple of reasons. You talked about his upside, not having a ton of experience playing a quarterback at the college football level. But what you get with this guy is, it looks like he's far beyond his years, just a natural football player. And that shows up, one, when you see this guy go through his progressions and find secondary targets in that Mike Sherman offense, as opposed to a guy like Brandon Weeden, who's more of a one-read, cut the field in half, and get the ball out quickly. So I think when you see that pocket presence that he has, the ability to play in the face of pressure, sidestep pressure, because of that athleticism, and still deliver the football with only, what, 8-9 games of experience pretty much, coming from that wide receiver position, you mentioned upside. I think this guy has a tremendous amount of upside, is he a guy who can come in and play, you know, day one? You know, he has a chance. We wouldn't have said Cam Newton had the ability to do that as well, but I think looking long term, where this guy can be 2-3 years down the line with some good NFL coaching. You mentioned the physical abilities. He can make all the throws. He's accurate. He's decisive with the football. And the more he gets it from the shoulders up, which I think because of that natural skill set, I think he's going to be able to. I think this guy has the making of being a heck of a quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I do too. To me, the two most intriguing, and I'm not saying the best because obviously we got Luck sitting out there, mm-hmm. but to me the two most intriguing, you know, quarterback prospects are in the state of Texas. It's him because of the upside, and it's also, you know, Robert Griffin because of the development he's made, because of, you know, you're talking about one of the fastest men who's ever played quarterback in college football, and it's not like he's turned in to become a completely pocket guy like, you know, like where all of a sudden he's Dan Marino, but just the growth of him from what you saw against, you know, has shredded Gary Patterson's defense on mm-hmm. on the opening night. You just want to see where is he going, you know, in his development. But getting back to Tannehill, also you mentioned the Mike Sherman thing. I mean, it's not like, I mean, he's playing for a guy who spent a long time in the NFL, and I think a lot of that stuff bodes well for him. And I do, again, I know this isn't a, you know, going to sound like a huge point, but I do go back to sitting there with Von Miller and Johnson last year before the season and listening to how those guys talked about Ryan Tannehill. And a lot of times you have, when you have a, and that wasn't a two quarterback situation in terms of like what you have at Penn State where it's flip-flopping or what you have at some other schools. That was a case where they were going with one guy and the other guy really sacrificed and said, you know what, I'm going to do the best for the team. I still want to, you know, take reps in at practice to be there in case. But, you know, the sacrifice, the commitment, and the respect he had among the team, you're talking about one of the guys who is probably maybe the most respected guy in the program, and that's before he came in and won a lot of games for them. And I think that kind of stuff, you know, lends itself to a lot of people once they go through the interview process being really impressed as he gets through the combine.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I've talked to a couple of scouts that cover that area, and they said that the coaching staff and a lot of players really liked Stephen McGee when he was there, and they said Tannehill's 10 times outside of McGee's league, and they liked him while he was there. So I think that says a lot about him. Plus, with the NFL, defenses, these defensive linemen, they're going to win matchups one-on-one at times. You have to be able to buy second lives in the pocket and create. I think Tannehill does that as just about as well as anyone while maintaining balance. Also like your boy Griffin as well, who, yeah, he's taken tremendous strides. But moving on, we're going to look at the other quarterback from the Oklahoma State-Texas A&M game. And I'll throw this one to you again first, Bruce. Brandon Whedon, I believe he's going to be 28 years old come October, former baseball player, second-round pick from the New York Yankees. But, you know, you cover college football a little more than I do, but his name's now being thrown around as a potential Heisman candidate. Extremely productive. I believe he threw for over 400 yards against A&M. And again, rolled up a lot of points. So what do you see from Brandon Whedon, not only at the college level, but potentially going forward?
Well, from the college level, this is the stuff I really am impressed by. Now, first of all, I should preface this by saying about last offseason, before the start, before he'd ever really played much for Oklahoma State, I was around Graham Harrell, the old Texas mm-hmm. Tech quarterback, and Eric Morris, who had been his receiver, who's now a coach at Houston, and a few other guys who were at, and Graham was at Oklahoma State, and also Dana Holgorsen had just got to Oklahoma State, and they were saying that Brandon Whedon probably has the best arm of anybody who'd ever played in the air raid system. And that goes back to, you know, all the guys who Mike Leach had, but everybody basically who had come up through that. The issues for him, though, were, one, he hadn't played much football at any high level. The other thing, and Holgorsen told me a lot about this, you know, after, you know, just this summer, was Brandon Whedon's pocket presence was atrocious when he first got there. I mean, he was a guy basically could almost stand, like thought he was on a pitcher's mound, could all just stand back there and try to wing it, and obviously it doesn't work that way. And so, you know, for Holgorsen, you went from a guy like Case Keenum, who has fantastic pocket presence and can do a lot of things to avoid taking the sack, even if he doesn't run with, you know, Robert Griffin-type speed or Denard Robinson-type speed, to a guy like Whedon, who's just doesn't have the sense and the savvy, but he made a lot of strides on that level as the year went on. I mean, the arm is definitely there. The other thing he has, you know, just as much as Tannehill has, and quite honestly, probably just as much as anybody in the country has, is he has great weapons. I mean, he has, you know, Blackman, he has Anium, he has Cooper. I mean, those are really good receivers. He has an emerging star in Joseph Randle, who is a great dual threat back. I mean, he's a really good receiver with some explosiveness, who has actually bulked up 10 or 15 pounds and now can take some shots. And I think that, you know, obviously he had Kendall Hunter before that, but you have a versatile guy behind him. I mean, this is a dynamic offense, and he has a command of it. You know, when you talk to people who've worked with him, Jake Spavital, who's now the quarterback coach at West Virginia, was at Oklahoma State last year, said, I mean, this guy is really poised and so relaxed. I mean, of all the quarterbacks that have been in that system, in that air raid system, almost every single one of them was the son of a high school coach. This guy, you know, Whedon was not, but his presence, or at least his maturity and his poise, is something that they said is really, you know, kind of shine through. Now, obviously, he's gone under a little bit of a different, not scheme, but approach, I think, in terms of going from Holgorsen to Munkin, the offensive coordinator. But, you know, I thought the way he has showed coming out of a really shaky first half to get hot in the second half in, you know, in a tough place, I think that was impressive. You know, the thing that is going to be a tough one for the scouts to sort out is, you hit on it, he's, you know, he's going to be in his late 20s when he gets to the NFL. And now, while he has a learning curve, and this is not a guy who's played a ton of college football still, and I'm sure there's going to be some people who are going to look at it and go, you know, even though the NFL system is not what it was, you know, 20 years ago, and there is a lot more of the overlap from some of the stuff that's going on in college, there's still going to be a difference. And I think that, you know, I feel like he is more of a wild card than Tannehill, even though neither guy has played a ton of college football. And I think some of that is due just to the age factor. You're talking about a developmental guy, and you almost need him to hit the ground running when you're talking about a guy in his late 20s, despite having that really good arm.
Mm-hmm. And what I think is fascinating about Whedon, you mentioned the arm strength, and talking with some scouts coming into the year, some, not all of them, but some actually questioned his arm strength. And I was looking at the tape like, what is there to question? And I think it's the fact that he throws such a catchable football. Like, he can change sometimes, you know, he can really spin it vertically down the field. But he's got plus touch on all areas of the field as well, giving his receivers the ability to adjust to the throw, go up and pluck it, run through the catch, throw receivers open, whatever he may need to do depending on what area of the field. So I thought that's an attribute that can't go overlooked, with his ability not only to spin it at the second level, throw the bucket throw vertically, but also the touch underneath. The other thing that I really like about him is the fade down by the goal line. I don't know if there's, granted, he's got Blackman to throw to, when you mentioned the nice slot guy in Cooper, but I don't know if there's a guy that throws a better fade down by the 10-yard line and in than Brandon Whedon at this stage. And you need points in the NFL, touchdowns especially. And I think when you have a guy that can throw the fade like he does, that's a definite plus. You hit on the overall pocket presence, and I think the presence is improving, Bruce. The eye level is inconsistent, and when he feels pressure, he still has a tendency to flush himself away at times, not always stride, transfer his weight back foot to front foot. That gets him in trouble, especially from an accuracy standpoint. But I do see a guy who can find secondary options at times. Most of the time, they want to cut the field in half, high-low read. But at times, he can work through his progressions. Watching him this year, I think he does a better job not throwing blind into coverage when he does find those secondary options. But overall, you're saying this guy has upside as a quarterback, but at 28, just how much and how long do we want to work with him, I think, overall, is the biggest question with him.
Yeah, that's definitely where I would see it coming. I mean, I do like his arm, and your point about, you know, you go back and watch the Arizona game, and he is textbook. I mean, if you have a young quarterback, you have any college quarterback, you say, this is exactly how it's supposed to look like when you're in the red zone.
And honestly, when Blaine Gabbert came out this past year and everyone was raving about his physical tools and this is that, and then the inconsistencies with his pocket presence, I was talking to someone, I said, honestly, if you throw out the age, what's the difference between a guy like Brandon Whedon and Blaine Gabbert? And, you know, honestly, when I watch the tape, I don't think there's all that too much, except Gabbert's 21 and Whedon's 28, to be honest.
Yeah, the one thing I would say, and I don't know what this is worth, because it goes back a little to the point we were just talking about with pocket presence, and, mm-hmm. and my example of Case Keenum is, Blaine Gabbert is a guy who could run, I think, legitimately. I've seen him, you know, just in straight ahead speed. He could run in the low 4.6s. I mean, he had that kind of speed.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of just a burst, but that's, you know, yeah, I think there's a difference. You could speak on this, you know, better than I can, but in terms of, okay, you know, this is Denard Robinson, who is blazing speed. This is Robert Griffin, who has freakish speed. And then there is the Case Keenum, who it's like, you know, he has it. Even you know, Dan Marino, who I'm guessing probably never could have run under a 5. Just the sense, the footwork, and obviously having a ridiculously quick release, you know, adds on to it. But just that ability, you know, that's one of the more fascinating things when you hear people as you get into the draft process. And I know you guys are, you know, almost, you know, pretty much constantly looking at it with that perspective too. But just to see what translates, because the stuff you can get away with in college is very different. I have a buddy who used to coach in colleges and now in the NFL. And some of the things he was telling me about, just in terms of guys who will take shots, not actually take physical, you know, pounding, but will quarterbacks willing to take those shots and some of those other things, you know, it's hard to see until they're at that level, and it becomes kind of a guessing game. And it's why, like, a Ryan Fitzpatrick, even at the level mm-hmm. he played at, can be somebody that they're really intrigued by, because he has that, I don't know if it's a gunslinger quality, I mean, if it's that simple, but there is something to be said for that, and I think that's one of the things that makes that this whole evaluation of quarterbacks so fascinating and probably so mind-numbing.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons why we can talk about it with great interest just about the last week of September. So, well, looking on, Bruce, we're going to talk about the LSU secondary, who's as talented as any secondary, not only in the country, but, you know, that we've seen out of college football in the last 5 to 10 years. And Bruce has a good piece over at CBS, the link's below, talking about Tyrann Mathieu. If you want to click that, check out Bruce's stuff again at CBS. You can follow him on Twitter as well. His handle's at the bottom of the page. But Bruce, since you wrote the piece on Tyrann Mathieu, I'll let you start with him. Undersized guy, about 5'9". He doesn't look like he's much over 180 pounds, but just a consistent playmaker that's always around the football.
Yeah, shockingly undersized is the way I'd put it. You know, just as a little tease, I've been working on, I was in Morgantown, spent a week with the West Virginia staff as they were really trying to prepare for this LSU defense. So the story I have coming up next, not the Tyrann Mathieu story, but the next one will be really about how Dana Holgorsen's staff prepared. And you just, after seeing it for a week of, you know, basically, they had their first three games, but they also watched a lot of the Texas A&M bowl game that LSU had. And, you know, at one point, Mathieu, you know, Patrick Peterson was still there. So, you know, he changed numbers. He was 14, then wore 7. But you're watching it, and after a while, this guy is the best player on their defense by far. I mean, he is such a wild card. You know, they listed him at Sam linebacker, because that's where he was doing a lot of damage. And he plays at such a different speed than it seems like almost everybody else on the field. And it's crazy because you got this guy who is, I mean, he's not tiny by, you know, average person standards. I mean, he's a muscled up 100, he told me he's 183 pounds, but he's, you know, he is short. I mean, he may not even be 5'9". I mean, I was definitely taller than him, and I'd say at best I'm 5'10 and a half. And, he just, you know, he comes at a lot of different places. You see the things. He made a great interception near deep in West Virginia's territory near the end of the first half to really change the game. But he just does a lot of things that the other team has seen, but it's just seeing it and being able to react to it. He makes everybody nervous because of this guy plays with such reckless abandon. And one of the coaches on the West Virginia staff actually said he's like a mini Polamalu. And because you have a guy who's, you know, who has great ball skills, but is such a force in the run game, blowing up plays. You can watch, they played Texas A&M in the bowl game, and I forgot who the right tackle was for A&M, but he literally just blows right under him. I mean, just straight shot. It wasn't like it was like, you know, one of these kinds of things where he had to take a roundabout turn. He just was just too quick and blows up the play and blows up Tannehill. And there, you see a lot of that. And he's a really interesting player going to be to watch, I'm guessing, for 2.5 more years, because you know, you don't see a lot of 5'9 or 5'8.5 whatevers on defense doing a 3-and-out, no matter how much of an impact player they are at college, you know. And you know, he's got a lot of stuff to him, because he will talk a lot during the game. He will tick off the opposing fans. They were hating him by the end of the day. That number 7, man, you know, I'm trying to think, short of Tim Tebow, and Tim Tebow was in a different category for part of this, but I can't remember an opposing defensive player, and maybe Vontaze Burfict is this guy too, and another number 7, but where the rival fans hate him like he's a Duke basketball player. And I think that's what you're going to have from Tyrann Mathieu over time, because he is a guy who gets under everybody's skin. And look, LSU got a gem. I mean, Mathieu told me basically he was offered by Louisiana Monroe and FIU and Hampton. And he was in LSU's backyard. Frank Wilson, who played at St. Augustine's High School, which is the same school Mathieu comes from. You know, he'd seen him a bunch of times when Wilson was at Tennessee on that staff. He got Mathieu to come up to their summer camp. He won the defensive MVP honors, and they still, you know, Wilson said he was still lobbying the rest of the guys there on the staff, and they were still skeptical on a guy who at the time was 5'8", 160. And he was like, this kid is so fearless, so fast, and so tough, and he has the biggest heart of anybody I've ever seen on a football field, that we need to get him. And then when he got to LSU, obviously, you know, they were able to keep him, you know, to lock in and say, you know, we're going to take a shot. And it didn't take long for him, you know, to win over teammates who looked at him and go, this guy's too small to play here. And he's shutting down Reuben Randall and Russell Shepard in summer 7-on-7 from the time he showed up there.
Yeah, and that's a fascinating take, Bruce. And when I look at Mathieu, and you brought up play speed, the guy's, we'll say, 5'9", 183. Does he run? Does he have Patrick Peterson-type straight-line speed? I haven't watched tape of it yet, but I haven't. You know, I've seen him on TV. I don't think he's a 4-3 guy. But he
The one thing I will say on that, Wes, is I talked to a couple of his teammates. They, you know, I brought that up too, because when he went to their camp, he clocked a 4.48, and you can question how fast, you know, high school camp time is. But but the guys on his team say they think he is the second fastest player on the defense behind Claiborne. So, okay. I mean, his speed is good. Now, maybe he won't show up in Indy, you know, 3 years from now or two, whenever it is, 2 years from now, and run a 4.39, but they do think he's, you know, he's a low 4.4 guy at worst.
Yeah. So, but even then, you know, he's not some at low 4.4, he's not some elite speed guy. But I think what he does is he plays faster than these elite speed guys, because you were saying his ability to decipher information, his anticipation on the defensive side of the ball, and the way he crouches and plays so low. I talk about corners being leggy in and out of their breaks. When they have too wide of a stride, they have to chop their feet or gear down in order to collect their balance and change directions. He plays so low, keeps his feet under him so consistent, that he's able to change directions instantly, creating that burst, driving on the football, allowing him to play faster, quicker, and more powerful than his frame would lead you to believe. And plus you add in the ball skills and the overall instincts that he possesses. You know, you either have that or you don't. And I like the Polamalu that you brought up. I heard Ed Reed when I was watching the game Saturday night. You know, I'm trying to think of a corner that I can point to, said, you know what, he's similar to this guy in the NFL, but there's not many corners in the NFL playing at 5'9", 180 pounds. And I almost think this guy's best suited, you know, with more and more NFL teams going to these 3-4-5 receiver sets. You can just play him inside, even if it's a cover two. Yeah, and at the same time, a cover two where he's just able to read and react, let people run by him and go close on the quarterback. You know, so many times where teams are trying to just run some kind of quick out and he can jump routes in front of them, this guy will come up with 6 to 8 interceptions a year playing from the slot. So there's a place for this guy in the NFL. There's no doubt about that. It's just just like he had to sell LSU, that he's going to be a good player there, he's going to have to sell some team in the NFL, you know, that he can play in the slot consistently.
Yeah, I mean, I know. I was trying to think of, because Polamalu, I mean, living out here in California, Polamalu is definitely physically bigger. You know, I mean, no matter what happens to Tyrann Mathieu, he's not going to become 5'11" or, you know, at this stage of his life. He's not. And the one physical size guy, because Ed Reed, you know, was definitely bigger and had ridiculous ball skills and sense about him. And I think Mathieu has some of that. And obviously, they're both New Orleans kids. The one guy size-wise, and it's just size, I'm not talking about in terms of, you know, playing, who was one of these guys who had the humongous chip on his shoulder like this, is Bob Sanders. And I know guys on your site are, you know, are really familiar with him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just in terms of being a guy who, I don't know, what Bob Sanders, 5'8",
yes.
You know, and now they play differently. But in terms of, I could see Mathieu, I mean, he's pretty thick now. I could see him being, you know, 5'8", 195 by the time he leaves there, maybe 5'8", 200. Again, I don't know. I mean, he's gone up against the Reuben Randles at practice. Reuben Randle is, you know, one of the better-looking receivers playing football at any level. You know, I mean, you're not talking about a 6'1 guy. You're talking about a guy, you know, you would think he would be able to just do some things against Mathieu that wouldn't be able to react to, and he is able to react to it. And,
do you remember, you know, Bruce, how big Earl Thomas was? Was he 5'10"?
Yeah, Earl Thomas was definitely bigger than Mathieu was.
He was bigger. I remember he had the small, but I never remember seeing him up close.
Yeah, seeing him up close, he's definitely like, Tyrann Mathieu is one of the other guys who reminds me of him. And again, this is a guy who does not have the ball skills and play as fast as Mathieu, but stature-wise, Jamarcus Sanford was a safety at Ole Miss, who was a really rocked up 5'8 at best, like 205-pound guy who had straight ahead speed. Like, Jamarcus Sanford was definitely in the 4.4 somewhere, but he had nowhere near the ball skills. I mean, he was tough as could be, but nowhere near the ball skills or the instincts or played at this speed as this kid. But from a physical standpoint, that's about the same, you know, where you basically are looking down at this, you know, at this guy who just looks like a little pit bull.
Yeah, and if you can get him to 5'9", 195, you know, you can play him in the deep half as a safety, and if you need him to come down over a slot, and any kind of, even if you want to stay in base and you want him to come down over a slot, he can handle the inside player as well. It's almost like you're looking at these DPRs, these designated pass rushers that the NFL have. With Mathieu, it's almost like he's a designated pass defender. You can bring him in, he can cover whoever you want. Just gives you that versatility in the secondary. And when it's all said and done, when you have a football player as good as him, it's tough to see him getting outside, you know, anywhere past the second round. Size, speed, teams worry about in the first, but he's one of those football players that you're wondering 3-4 years past, you know, how did this guy get outside the first round with all the plays he's making?
Yeah, he would be a great chess piece for these defensive coordinators. And also, you know, another plus, and this is more to me more of an issue with college recruiting than in NFL, but I'm sure it happens a little from the guys I know who play in the NFL, is this guy loves football. Mm-hmm. He is just, you know, insane about it. And so you put that competitiveness on your team. You know, look, keep in mind also, I mean, he was out there returning punts with 1 minute left in the game. I mean, he is a pain in the butt on special teams, too. So, you know, I don't know. He's going to be an asset. I'm excited that he's going to be in college football for a little while longer because he's fun to watch.
Yeah, no doubt. Last guy we'll touch on, Bruce, Morris Claiborne, the 6-foot, 185, 190-pound corner, whatever he's listed at. It seems like he's really starting to come into his own. And before I throw it to you, I got a chance to watch some tape of him as a sophomore where he had his quote-unquote breakout season. And when I watched him, you could tell the athleticism, the balance was all there, but he was more athlete than corner. When I watched him early this year, and this is a much more polished kid, and I talk about Mathieu crouching low and staying low in his drop, and I thought Claiborne did a much better job staying compact in his drop, clicking and closing on footballs underneath. Still has a tendency to pop up, right, especially in press man, but when you see his length, these pterodactyl-like arms, I mean, he can still reroute receivers. For a big guy, he's smooth in and out of his breaks, can turn and run. In all honesty, I've seen Drake Kirkpatrick, but as a pure cover man, you're going to have a tough time convincing me that there's a player that has more upside than Morris Claiborne at this stage in college football.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that, you know, you listed his height and weight. Physically, in person, he looks bigger than that.
Does he really?
I don't know if that's part of it because of the long arms. LSU has a couple of really, you know, just long cornerbacks. Mm-hmm. Simon, on the other side, is every bit of 6'2". You know, he may even be more than that.
Is that 24?
What is he? Is he 7? I think, what is Simon? I think he's in the 20s. I'm trying to remember what number.
That doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think he is 24. But he's just really long, and Claiborne is too. Now, Claiborne, everybody on the team says is the fastest player on the defense. You're the fastest player on the defense. You're plenty fast for the NFL.
You saw
him in the return game make big plays. The thing that just from, you know, having watched a lot of film this week or last week on LSU is, they are up on the line in your face more than any college team in the country. I mean, they are physical. They are going after you. I mean, there's a tenacity there. And nobody really, in fairness, this was the first game where I think they faced all year a legitimate, you know, top passing quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Darren Thomas is a great runner. But is not very sharp. And you watch the film; he's not. That's not a big time passing game. Obviously, Mississippi State doesn't have it either. Geno Smith can throw the ball around. The only thing Geno Smith probably isn't very good at right now as a passer is those bucket throws. But everything else, I mean, he will stand in the pocket. He will try to pick apart a defense. He's got the release. He's a good thrower, and they have good receivers. And so, you know, you saw LSU go at that, and they obviously gave up a ton of passing yards because West Virginia was so committed to what they were going to do, and I think that they were good at picking out the underneath stuff and everything. But you watch Claiborne. I mean, he's got it. I think he's the guy where you look at and say, that's definitely a guy who's going to be a starting cornerback in the NFL.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you talk about how aggressive they are, especially when they're in press coverage, and he's got that skill set, you know, where he can get up in your grill, he can reroute you off the line. At times he'll shoot with the wrong hand. You know, he's still developing that area. But it's rare to see a guy, and you talked about him possibly even being a little bit bigger than 6'1", 185, but to maintain that balance and not being forced to chop his feet in order to redirect, just the fluidity in this guy's hips. And Patrick Peterson was one of those rare athletes for a size speed guy like he was, could fluidly turn and run. Julio Jones playing on the other side of the ball, the same type of athlete. And Claiborne, we get so caught up sometimes, we want these corners to be 190, 195. We start to get a little heavier, a little stiffer. And at 185, he's so fluid and explosive when asked to change directions for a bigger guy. I think you can even play him in some off coverage. I think he could hold his own in zone certainly as well. But his bread and butter is going to be up near the line, pressing the Calvin Johnsons, the Andre Johnsons of the world, because as we see, NFL teams, you can never have too many corners, especially ones that are able to cover these bigger receivers in the NFL.
Well, and you're also seeing, you know, just from, you know, what was charted on LSU that I saw, you're also seeing them be much more aggressive now than they were even last year, because before basically the A&M game, they were blitzing around 20-25% of the time. Now it's up over 40%, and some of that speaks to, you know, you have three cornerbacks there. You know, obviously I'm including Tyrann Mathieu in this, mm-hmm. with Simon and Claiborne, who are going to get up on you. And it's almost like they're on your side of the line of scrimmage. That's how close they're in. I mean, they just absolutely maul people. And you watch enough film of it where there was a couple of times where you watch – it looks like they just took the will of the other team's receivers. I mean, I remember getting back to Mathieu for just a second. There was a play in the Mississippi State game where one of Mississippi State's probably best offensive players is trying to cut Mathieu, and he just basically looks like he just throws himself at the ground. And you see it where I just think it's almost like they just break people down by the second half. And you know, it's going to be a long season, and I know LSU has to go to Alabama, and that's a loaded team, and there's plenty of good teams on LSU's schedule, but this is a scary defense to watch with all the pieces that are coming together. You know, I don't know how, you know, they're deep in the defensive line. I don't know if their linebackers are at the quote elite level for NFL type guys, but the secondary is, you know, the safeties will hit and hit, and they're you know, very aggressive and physical specimens. The corners are outstanding, and they run such a deep and young defensive line rotation, and they're going to be a problem.
Yeah, there's a real swagger about those corners when, like you said, they get up in the face as close as anyone, and pretty much they're daring them to throw over top because they know they can turn and run with just about anyone. But, Bruce, that about wraps it up. Want to thank you again for coming on today.
It's been great being on with you. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the site, as you guys know, and I ran into you at the Combine last winter, and so I'm excited to be on.
Thanks, Bruce. And again, if you want to read Bruce's stuff, we have links at the bottom of the page here. You can follow him on Twitter. You can check him out at CBS, and of course, the link to his new book as well. So, Bruce, I want to thank you again. And guys, be sure to tune in next week as we'll have another guest on. I believe it'll be Pete Prisco from CBS. So thanks again, and have a good week.